Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Tonight, our 40-minute speaker is Albert from Encinitas. How you doing? My name is Albert. I'm an alcoholic. Somebody left their water here? Or is this for me? Oh, cool. Thanks. Appreciate it. I don't drink much water, but... just joking. Anyways, grateful to be here. Welcome all the newcomers to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. If there are any newcomers out there, you very rarely run into any newcomers that ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And what I mean by that is, they've never heard of the stuff you've already heard about, getting a sponsor, getting a big book, and getting a sobriety date, you know, and keeping it. That's what they told me, is to get a sobriety date and put it in front of the big book on the first page, the blank one. That's what you know about being sober, nothing. And put it there, you know, and leave it there. Write it in pen, you know, don't put it in a pencil. Don't have that pencil sobriety. Anyways, some people like that. They like the pencil sobriety. This is pretty trippy here. I feel like I'm trying to get some porn reception or something. I don't know. Internet porn. It's like, yeah, frequency's coming in. Wait. Oh, almost. I drive trucks, though, for a living. So we have a lot of funny jokes. And unfortunately, a lot of them, truth is worse than fiction. You know, when we tell you, you think this guy's got to be kidding. You know what I mean? About what he's talking about and believe it. Unfortunately, it's the truth. Is most everything that's weird, you got, that guy's pretty strange. I used to think, are people stranger now, you know, with all the weird crap out there? You know, society's just so, I don't know, it's just the morality, you know, it's just gone down the toilet. It's just, and I've gone with it. She's like, so easy to become shady in AA. You know, anyways, for me. And I don't know. I don't know if it's really gotten worse. I guess it's a little bit different, but it's pretty strange out there. Anyways, I'm just happy to be sober. I want to thank Jordan for asking me. It's funny that I'm here because it's a weird coincidence. The only reason I'm really here is because I got kicked out of my home group for abusing some newcomers, which I just mentioned. I very rarely run into any newcomers anymore. I was having an argument with this drunk girl. And, like her and her drunk boyfriend. And they like coming to AA and sucking up the coffee, but they just don't like the not drinking part. You know, so I got in an argument with them, and then there's this homeless guy running the club that I helped, like the first couple days he got sober. I remember I was talking to this girl I knew, and I was on the phone, and I was like, man, I am looking at the weirdest dude I've ever seen coming to AA. And this guy came walking into the club in North County, San Diego, the Step House. It's a little club we got there, a little house we call it, where the sea meets the debris. And, you know, we just get some shady-ass people coming right off the street. And they come in, suck up some coffee and all this. And I got in an argument with this girl. And the next thing you know, my friend's like, this guy's ejecting me from my club. You know, he's like, you can't come here. And this guy, he's got over a year sober. And now he's the house manager of this place. You know, they got a little room in back, and he takes care of it. And when he came there, he had, like, this hair... that was like, dude, it was unbelievable. He had, actually, it was hair and it was in a rubber band. It looked like a cone on his head. And he had a black jacket and some army boots. And he was coming from San Diego up the coast walking. He said he's just tired of living on the streets and people keep stealing his guitars. And so another one of my crazy homeless friends said, dude, you need to get your act together and quit drinking and get you a haircut. You know, so we took him into the alley and we had some scissors. And we said, dude, you need to cut that thing off your head, whatever. And I called it a carcass, you know what I mean? It was like a Caltrans thing. And he said it was dreadlocks, but I think the guy had a resentment towards me. So he's been waiting like a year to eject me. And it's funny, the guy with 25, my sobriety date's December 4th, 1985. And, you know, I bring that up because it's really the main date for me. it's like Norm Alpe says, maybe they get a pension plan going here, and I want to, you know, get some credit, you know, get a retirement plan going. So, anyways, I got ejected from my club, so I was at this other group, and Jordan asked me, hey, you want to come talk in San Clemente or whatever? So I said, sure, shit, why not? You know, and I'm a successful person in Alcoholics Anonymous because, you know, I haven't found it necessary to drink in over 25 and a half years. Like some people say, I might have had a few drinks, but it wasn't necessary. You know, so if you missed that joke, but anyways, and I smoke a little medical marijuana, which is cool these days, doctor prescribed, of course. That's why I'm feeling so good tonight. Anyways, I'm just joking. I don't smoke. I grow my own, sort of like that guy back there from Hawaii, you know. But yeah, I was over in the islands a couple months back on the North Shore, and that was fun. But anyways, you know, I never like speaking with these things in front of you. I think I'm like, what do they call it when you don't, you know, gay guy, you know, claustrophobic, homophobic, anything like this pointed towards my mouth. You know, I mean, I've been to jail, you know what I mean? And I'm not into this, you know? I mean, you know, like, I feel like, you know, I'm just not into this, you know what I mean? And I have a loud voice anyways because I grew up in a big family and nobody cared about what we had to say. So you just start getting louder and louder. And I have a deaf brother, really. My younger brother's deaf completely. So I'm pretty loud as it is, loud and obnoxious. And I used to drink. And it used to be loud and obnoxious. And if you're loud and obnoxious like me, it tends to make drinking a contact sport. You know, guys want to hit you when you start talking about their moms and, you know, them being from San Clemente or whatever. Anyways, so it's pretty funny. But I have a lot of fun being sober, all joking aside. You know, welcome all the new people, really. And congratulations to the people with the birthdays. That's killer. I mean, the first year is unbelievable. Getting you 30 days is unbelievable. You know, a guy that makes it without a day or a drink for a day is a miracle. You know, I've been able to do it for a long time, one day at a time, just by the grace of God and a little effort on my own part. You know, actually, I tell my friends there's probably three reasons why I'm sober and a lot of my friends aren't. It's because I know at least two of them. One, I work a better program than you do. Two, God loves me more than them. Or three, God just wants to screw with them, you know? So, anyways, I have a lot of fun, especially abusing the retreads. You know, it's a great time. You know, we got to have retreads here, you know, to make the rest of us look good, right? So, that's what they told me, even though you're sober, your main purpose might be to serve as a bad example. You know, I mean, and that's what you retreads do. You know, you're living proof that it's not getting better. So, anyways, this could be like an AA speaker here, and I can talk about my drug problem over here. But, anyways, the good thing about AA is the crowd thins. You know, that's the cool part. Just for today, you know. So, I mean, really, and it's good. This is a religious, this is cool. I've never seen crosses with lamps like this. This is trippy. You know, I mean, I was born Catholic and, you know, I come from a big Catholic family. That's not why I'm here. You know, I never had a priest sneak up behind me and say, oh, I want you to drink and use and screw your life up or I'm going to do some crazy stuff to you. You know, I'm in this room because I ruined my life. I did it all to me. You know, I hear a lot of people talk about the churches and stuff. Maybe some weird stuff happened to them, but it just wasn't my case. You know, I come from a good family. I mean, we had problems. You know what I'm saying? It's like my family's Catholic. They came, whatever, from Switzerland. They were there, the San Fernando Valley, and I was born and blah-de-blah. And they kept having kids. Next thing you know, my family's too big. And, you know, my mom couldn't handle it. She like started spinning out. She had some kind of like mental illness thing. And next thing you know, I got a brother that's deaf. And, you know, long before I started drinking, I don't know, my family does drink and they drink wine and this and that. But I just felt life was strange. You know, I couldn't deal with it. Didn't like it. And I found drinking, you know, like my dad used to drink wine and all those Catholic relatives from the San Fernando Valley, and they talk about whatever, Switzerland or cheese or whatever, and I don't know when I started liking drinking, but eventually I liked it. You know, because most of the time I either feel better than you or worse than you or different than you. And I started drinking and I like the effect produced by alcohol. That's what it talks about in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I like the effect produced by alcohol. That's what I do. That's why I'm here. Not because I'm a great guy. You know, I mean, I care too much what people think, you know, about me. You know, I used to, when I drink, do the girls like me? What about my family? It's like I had this strange family. My brother's deaf. We my dad stored trash in the garage. It was like my mom, when I was a kid, she was taking her clothes off in the middle of the street. And it was like, when I was like third grade. How do you explain that to your friends in school? It was a heat wave? I don't know. But, you know, and then my brothers were getting high, doing drugs. I'll go to this speaker over here for the NA meeting. But anyways, they did drugs, you know, and I'll talk about those non-conference approved chemicals. But I did drugs alcoholically. You know, I could use up a year's full of crap in about a week. I mean, I just got back from the 99-cent store and I drive semi and I could drink energy drinks and Red Bulls. And I mean, I'll just use up all my stuff in about 3 days. I'm a pig. If I was on a farm, I would be a pig. That's what kind of farm animal I'd be. You know, I mean, my drug of choice is yours. You know, more, free. And whatever it was, you know. So, anyways, I have a lot of fun being sober. You know, people, we just thin the crowd out. It's great people don't want to be in AA. You know, I wish them well. Not as well as I wish myself. But AA is a tough program to be in. Like I say, especially the people that don't want to quit drinking. And I really like this meeting, the people that are active, man, the ones that are doing the deal, the secretaries, the people, the GSRs, man, I'm impressed. You know, that's a big deal. And to have a commitment, you know, and I've been thinking maybe it's because of these cell phones that people aren't staying sober. I mean, I remember this guy brought a cell phone to a meeting. It was like the first one. It was huge. It was like this big box. And it had like a horse on it. You know what I mean? It was like a FBI box and it had like a ivory thing. It was fake. And I go, what's that, dude? This is like an 87 or something, 89, 90. And he goes, that's a cell phone. And I go, what's a cell? He goes, dude, it's a telephone. And he had it plugged in the wall. And he opened it up. And that was like, I guess, the first downfall of AA. But it was huge. I remember that. And then they had these big cell phones. This is part of being sober. And then they had these big cell phones. Maybe some of these old-time AA guys remember these. They were weird, or any of you guys that were using and drinking. And they had plastic on it. You know what I mean? They were like 6 inches long. Nobody ever took the plastic off. It was real weird. This went on for like 3 years. And then people got pagers. I remember that. And you'd have like a business pager, you know? A lot of my friends sold cars. And then you have a personal pager. It was real cool to come into AA with two pagers. Oh, this is for my girlfriend. And this is for the guys I sponsor. And then I got one back here. It was just crazy. I mean, and I think we're losing members. I see them walking out right now. Maybe it's they don't like me. I don't know. Maybe somebody, they got to go text their sponsor. But what I've been thinking is we got this Google and Facebook stuff going on right now, right? Internet, eBay, Google, Yahoo. I don't know, all that stuff. And what I figured out is I recycle a lot. I was telling Jordan, he threw out a can. I gave him a soda, and he went through in the trash. I go, I actually recycle because when I need money, I go and they give you money for this stuff. And anyways, I told him I got these corks here, and I tried to give them to new people. And they used to say, put the plug in the jug. You know, the plug in the jug, right? The plug in the jug. Okay, a lot. Anyways, talking about booze, not crack. And all these other drugs. But these things, I found one with a wire on top. And I told my friend, not only that, dude, tie the wire back down. And see, what I think is happening with these new people is they're not hearing put the plug in the jug. They're on their cell phones and they're hearing something like there's a bug in the rug or something different. You know what I mean? Because they're not hearing that and they're missing the staying sober part. But that's all right, you know. I don't really care. I mean, I wish people stay sober, but the main thing is I make it. You know, I think if you want to stay sober, that's the main deal. You know, I love being sober. I have a great life. My best drinking days are behind me. I guarantee you that. You know what I'm saying? I hope to God I've never choose to go back to that hell. You know what I mean? But drinking did work. I mean, you know, when I was young, I mean, like young guy here, you know, I was, man, my teeth were crooked and I was thin and I had my weird family. I couldn't bring some girl that I liked over to my family. I'm from Oxnard, which is above L.A. on the beach. And we moved up there, and all my buddies drank, and we were into localism, and you had all these Southers that would come up and surf, so we had to protect our beaches, and our old buddies, we had to look up to them and fight the bigger dudes that came in, because to prove we were cool, and my friends started stealing all this shit, and I got into all that, and then, you know, I dropped out of school, couldn't understand it, started smoking that Thai stick, you know. And then I missed a couple of days surfing offshore, and I, you know, a good swell came in, and I was smoking that Thai stick, and I went back to school, and we were doing algebra, and I don't know when they added, like, algebra, it became like alphabet, you know, 1A plus, I go, when did they, I couldn't deal with it, so I just dropped out of school, and I went to work with my dad, you know, we got a big family, like 7 kids, and my dad doesn't really care about it. I mean, I'd have to quit school to go hang out with him, he had so many kids, you know, so I worked with him in Malibu and this and that, and got into drinking, and you know, it was fun, except one night I left the party at Silver Strand. We were dancing with these girls, and we were listening to that band that's like 30 years old now, the Go-Go's and the Talking Heads and Joe Jackson and all these guys, and we were listening to them, and I was drinking and smoking the weed, and I'd stash some booze on the side in the bushes, and you know, I don't know what happened, but I'd wake up the next day and I'd be passed out and I'd have like a black eye. And my shirt, I started borrowing shirts from my younger brother because I'd want to fight, you know, people. And then I'd try to rip my shirt, and the neck would be all stretched out. And I'd wake up, and I'd be all wet down here. And I go, man, I think somebody peed on me. And I couldn't figure it out. This went on for months. And I go, if I could ever catch this guy. You know what I mean? I never knew who it was. But my friends even started ostracizing me. Got to the point where my mom said, I wouldn't hang out with my son if I was you. You know what I mean? They usually say don't hang out with the other guys. But anyways, I mean, it was fun until like one day we went home and we were driving my Volkswagen car back to Camarillo from Silver Strand Beach. And there was a couple girls in the car and we were driving back home, my buddy Bernie. And we got out there and I was drinking. I don't know if we were drinking on the way, but we came back and I said, Bernie, I want to drive my car back, and if you don't want to go, whatever. But somehow I ended up in the car, my car, and the road was going like this, and then it just turned, and we hit a telephone pole. I would have really got hurt, but luckily Bernie slowed down the impact, and he got about 40 stitches in his arm, and he was felony drunk driving, and I went to the saw the judge like this, and I was doing a little podium participation. You know, Mr. Maitre, what do you plead? You know, guilty, public defender. You know, I'll go out to the airport, maybe do a couple weekends. I'm work with my dad. I'm about 17. You know, and I go, Your Honor, I'm guilty, felony, drunk driving. All right, you go do some weekends. We'll put you on probation. Maybe take away your license. All right, I'm getting in trouble, you know, with the law. And drinking is starting to do to me what it was doing for me. And I'm still drinking because I'm having problems. And I don't know why all this crap is happening to me. You know, I can't figure it out. I don't know why once I take a first drink, it sets off a phenomenon of craving. I can't guarantee when I'm going to stop, you know, until I'm in handcuffs or beat up or whatever. And, you know, I went on for a while, tried to get it in control. Maybe I bought a moped or rode a bicycle, you know, I was living with my parents. And then a few months later, got another car, and I was with my Hawaiian buddy, Duty, and we had a party at Silver Strand, and I was drinking. And, you know, when I drink, I like to drive, you know, preferably your car. Why ruin mine, you know? And I was driving again up to Ventura from Oxnard, and somehow Duty didn't care, and he was just along for the ride, and the highway patrol pulled me over. I noticed some lights going on. I pulled over the side of the road, and, you know, I made it across one bridge, but I don't think I would ever made it across the other one because it was about a mile long, and my brother didn't make it on one. He had an accident. They pulled me over, and I had a high blood alcohol level. It was like 0.30. You know, they took blood or whatever, breath, and I went back to court, and they said, "What's up, Mr. Maitre?" Same thing, this podium participation, just like this. You know, when I was young, I was under 23, and I said, I don't know, Your Honor. I don't know what's happening. I didn't say all that because you ain't got much time. There's this many people in the thing. And he goes, how do you plead? And I thought I was going to get some time to go back to the airport. And my older brother, Bernard, went with me because, you know, he got me started in drugs and all that crap. And maybe he thought he was partially responsible. And he goes, you'll be all right, bro. You get back out to the airport and all this shit. I don't know what happened between the morning court in the afternoon court, but if you ever did that, somebody pissed the judge off. You know what I mean? He was in a bad mood. And he goes, how do you plead, Mr. Maitre, to this second drunk driving, felony drunk driving? And I go, I'm guilty, Your Honor. I didn't even get a public defender. I look, and he goes, all right, we're going to give you 6 months for this, 6 months for that, 6 months for this. No jail, no drunk, no probation, no fine. Just 210 days, remanded to custody, and I was like getting, whoa, I was like, my legs started like getting wheezy, and I looked over at my dad, and he's just like, you know, and they just put the handcuffs on me, and I was right there, and anyways, you go down in the cell, and I just started doing my time. I did 7 months up at the Ojai Honor Farm, which is up in Ojai. It was a pretty nice place. You go out, work on a farm, you know, I was on the slaughter crew, slaughtering pigs, which was cool, you know, I was the only white guy. And a lot of Mexicans up there in Oxnard. And anyways, it was a cool job. I started out with a scrub brush, scrubbing the pigs. They finally worked me up to this like little flame flower thing, which was pretty cool. But, you know, I did my 7 months in jail, and I got out, and I thought I'd be able to quit. My friends had a party for me, you know, and at my dad's house. And I got out, and I drank. You know, that's what I did. And I didn't know how to quit. And somehow, you know, my friend found out I was having a problem because I just started doing stupid stuff. I mean, I was just out of control. I mean, I had so much hatred in me. I had so many problems in my mind. My soul was so poisoned, man. I had so many resentments against everybody and everything, and mainly me. And I didn't know what to do. But somehow my friend drugged me to one of these AA meetings. You know, he said, maybe Albert, he's a neighbor. He said, maybe you ought to come to an AA meeting. I'm going to go to one. You want to go to one? I said, not really, but I think I'll try. I got a drinking problem. And it was around December 4th. I tried AA, but I was smoking some weed once. And this girl goes, are you doing any mind-bending chemicals? I go, I got a couple joints in my sock right now. You know, I'm trying to make it a month. And she goes, well, you're not sober and all that. I go, well, screw you. And I went out and smoked them, I guess, and I got drunk. But eventually I made it back here. And, you know, this program started looking attractive other than all the beautiful girls and all the cool fellowship and all that. I just wanted out of the way I was living. And it was, like I say, December 4th, 1985, a few times before that. And I grew up in a poor family, and my dad was always just sick of getting me out of jail and going to court with me. And I just prayed to God. I said, dear God, you know, asked for help. And, you know, I just went back to that club and I just got started being sober, you know, and, you know, I didn't really like AA, so like maybe some of the people don't like me tonight, and they walk out, and I told my sponsor, and he says, you know, I just got to ask one question, who sent for you? You know, we don't need you, you need us, and you're only a newcomer once, you know, and he said, yeah, you believe in the hereafter? And I go, I don't know, I'm praying. He goes, well, just remember, if you ain't here after what I'm here after, I'm going to be here long after you're gone. And he, you know, he's still sober, Joyce Pruitt. And they got me mopping, like I said, before the cell phones. We didn't have anybody to call. You know, you have to actually use a phone like the old Grapevines and a Dime and all that stuff. Like they call in Akron, Ohio, when Bill Wilson called and Dr. Bob to get a hold of him because he was going to drink and his whole Akron thing went to crap, you know, and he got a hold of those people and he told Dr. Bob that he had a problem drinking. And Dr. Bob wasn't able to quit. He was going to the Oxford group and he went over and talked to him. And that's how this program got started. You know, one drunk helping another, whether you like me or not. You know, you better not get too critical of whatever. I mean, being critical of AA is a dangerous thing for a guy like me. You know, it's not easy to stay here. I got to really be, you get critical, you get thirsty, and then you get a new, you know, like Norm Alpe says, some people don't make it back for their new sobriety date, you know. I want to keep my date. I already got, you know, broken, smashed fingers, broken nose, chipped teeth, scars on my head from drinking before. I'm lucky to be here now. You know, you guys know what I'm talking about, but if you want to go out and play the game, good luck. You know, better you than me. I hope you make it back to tell us what it's like out there, but, you know, most of us know how it is, and, I don't know. Sobriety's been good, you know. And the thing is, December 4th, I got the sobriety date, and I was able to go through Christmas and be sober for my family. You know, my dad didn't have to, he didn't have to worry about me. And that's how drinking is, you know. It affects the whole family. And when my brothers didn't quit drinking, you know, we'd sit at home. And, shit, wait for him to come home. You know, those phone calls you get 2, 3 in the morning, they're not like some party you're going to get invited to. It's either the police station, the hospital, or the mortuary. The mortuary don't usually call, but it's not good news. And I used to sit up with my dad and realize the crap I put him and my mom through. you know, drinking. So when I'm sober, and it ain't always going so great, I try to think of the people that I affect, you know. That I can make it another day, whether I'm, you know, sleeping in my car or recycling or whatever it is. I'm starting to feel like I'm having a shitty deal in sobriety, you know, because I ain't got the girl and the pad or whatever it is, you know. And, you know, by the grace of God, I just still got my sobriety date. And anyways, you know, I got sober. And after about second year of sobriety, you know, I got started mopping floors in my clubhouse up in Oxnard. And, you know, mopping floors and washing the ashtrays because we used to smoke a lot in the clubs. And, you know, the old timers were like, don't mop. And then you have the cups, you know, they're like, can't like mix the cups and wash the cups with the ashtrays. And, you know, you got to like wash the ashtrays separate. It's like they just love ragging on you. It's just hilarious. And then you go to mop the floor and then you go, all right, well, where'd you put the mop? Oh, I just put it in the closet. You can't. Where'd you clean it? In the sink? Now the sink's going to get clogged. Shit, what do you think? We got money to hire plumbers here at our clubhouse? You got to wash it outside. All right, where'd you pour the water? Over in that thing. Dude, there's flowers there. All right, now you got to wring it out. Go across the street with that thing. All right, where'd you put the mop? I put it in the closet. Dude, now it's going to get all moldy. All right, you think we can afford these mops? Dude, we're in AA. We're not rich. I mean, I was stressed out. You know what I mean? Dude, mopping the floor. I was like, dude, I didn't even think about going back out. I mean, the way they were ragging on me, you know, just being sober. But eventually you get to move up, you know. You get a few new guys behind you. Then you get a rag on me like, dude, what are you doing with the mop? You know? You're just putting way too many bubbles in that thing. The guy's like, dude, all he's worried about is getting his girlfriend back, you know what I mean? Maybe get his cell phone turned back on, you know? Get his mom to come pick him up after the meeting. Take him and his girlfriend out to Burger King. Anyways, maybe that's what they need so they could have it their way, you know, Burger King. But you know, sobriety's been great. You know, after about my second year of sobriety, how late do I go here? How late does this thing turn off? What time's the meeting over? 9:30?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll stop it on 9:20, something good like that. But anyways, I'll just tell you brief about my sobriety. After about second year of sobriety, my older sister Ann decided to, you know, it was a good idea to kill herself, or a bad idea. And she chose to, you know, kill herself, shoot herself in the head with a nice shotgun kind of stuff. And that wasn't, you know, that's why I'm sort of off the wall and jaded and got sort of a screwed up, who cares attitude, because a lot of people do, because, you know, I figured after about my second sobriety, when I was going up from Oxnard to Oregon to go to my sister's funeral with my fucking dad and my mom and my deaf brother and my sister and her two kids, that I better try to learn how to get a sense of humor. I ain't going to stick around here. You know, and I made it through that and the whole family, and it's been tough. Just like anybody out there, you all got problems. You all got families and tragedies and stuff, you know. And I like to talk about the tragedies because that's where you get the strength to stay sober, is through those tragedies. You know, anybody can make it on a good day, but anyways, you know, and my younger brother, my deaf brother who I love, he was, you know, he can't hear, but he could hear that beer can pop about a mile away, you know what I mean? And he likes to drink just like me and everybody else to identify, and he was like at this house where he was at, but on the outside, but, you know, he was drinking, he got hit by a car, and he got bounced off a curb, and next thing I know, he's in the hospital. I moved down to San Diego, you know, and I can't deal with my family, man, they're killing themselves. I mean, he had his head stitched up, and he had this thing that they had to cut the thing because of the blood, and it was going to explode his brain, kind of. I'm just like, dude, are you kidding me? So anyways, the good story is he's still alive. And you're going great, but no, actually, he is doing good. We had to institutionalize his ass, you know. And he's up in Bakersfield in a contained environment, just like some people got to be, because they can't control themselves and they can't quit getting high, and they don't want to be sober. So they got places like my buddy Mitch that I used to surf with when I was a kid. You know, when we started out, he's up in Wasco Prison doing about 20 years, whatever, because he thought it was a good idea to smoke some crack and, you know, duct tape some lady up and rob her, and he got busted. And you know, they just don't like those things. So they give you like, you know, it's an automatic 15 years. I went to go see him once, and it was just like, he's so deep in prison. I mean, I drove up there, and they're like, dude, it's such a hassle to even see anybody behind bars. So much paperwork. But so sometimes when I think I'm having a bad day, I think of my buddy Mitch, you know, who's really a couple bad moves. That's what could happen to a guy like me. You know, but sobriety's been good. You know, I met a girl, and we got married, and I was from Oxnard, and I met some girl in the program and dated her. You know, I took her out for a couple hamburgers, you know, and we fell in sick, you know. The rocks in my head fit the holes in hers, and, you know, next thing we know, we moved in together, and, you know, like they say, it takes no more effort to marry a rich woman than it does a poor one. And I ended up marrying a rich one. You know, her mom had a lot of money, and that worked out pretty good at the first part of the program. You know, going into it, you know. So, I mean, I'm still paying on that cheeseburger, believe me. I mean, if I had any idea. Anyways, we had a daughter together. We moved down to San Diego. That's how I ended up in San Diego. We moved from Oxnard, Ventura. Her mom had a lot of money. She lived in Del Mar, this big house, all kinds of crap in there. And she was a little nutty, you know, her mom, but she knew my family was a little crazy, so she really wasn't going to shock me. You know, one day I saw her, I go to her door, and she's in a robe with a bunch of cigarette burns, and she's got these giant glasses, and her eyes look huge, and she's smoking a cigarette, and she's like, "How are you doing?" And that was my ex-wife's mom. But anyway, she said, "Come down here to San Diego and help me sell this house in Del Mar, and I'll give you some money." And she gave us a bunch of money to buy a house down in like Rancho, or about a quarter mile from Rancho Santa Fe. It was a beautiful house on an acre of land, and, you know, we had a daughter, and we had all the crap, you know, the BMWs and beautiful house. And anyways, we just drifted, you know. She didn't like my seedy little A group and that I was going to, and she wanted to raise our daughter all perfect and BMWs and private school, Waldorf schools and all this stuff. And we just drifted, and we ended up getting divorced, and, you know, I went to court and tried to be with my daughter and, you know, get my rights as a father. And I had psychological evaluations. I've been to parenting classes. You know, I've been sober 25 years. And she's like, "Well, maybe you're a little stressed out and manic." And so I went to the hospital. I tried to get, like, diagnosed. And they go, "Maybe you need some medication." I got on that. And then I went to see the judge. And so they used all this stuff against me and all this other stuff. And anyways, the bottom line is, like, I'm on, like, supervised visits. You know what I mean? I got to go see my kid with some young girl walking around with me. And I've been doing this for like 12 years. You know, my daughter's 12. I get to see her, I drive up to Carpinteria and stay in my car and see my daughter and give this girl some money and go buy a couple bagels and go down to the beach and hang out for an hour or two and, you know, kiss her goodbye and say, "Honey, I love you." And, you know, I go, "This ain't fair." You know, my buddy, this one guy, he's an ex-Hell's Angel guy. He's been sober about 6 years, and his daughter, he gets her half the time. What happened to my life, you know? What happened to my sober life? So, I don't know. Maybe I got other problems, you know? I got some property out in Anza. I had a beautiful cabin until I tore it down. I was so stressed out not seeing my kid. I just kept tearing, hitting it with a hammer until it was gone. I looked around like, "Where the fuck? Where's my house?" You know? And then I pushed the front wall over. Anyways, it was just crazy. I mean, I've done more crazy crap sober because that's where I spent the last 25 years. July 4th, it'll be 25 years, 7 months. You know, I have no desire to drink or use. And anyways, I got land up there, and, you know, I've been to college, and I'm going to try to make it up. My sister's got 2 kids. I'm going to try one of her daughters, Dorothy and Bonnie. She's going to be getting married. I drive truck, Swift trucking, and I can't drink for that. I just let you people know, you know, I'm going out to work tomorrow. And you don't want somebody like me drinking. And that's where I came from, a drunk driver, a .30 drunk driver. And now I, you know, drive a semi. They gave me this big semi, you know. This morning I was down in Leucadia, and then I drove down to Otay Mesa right on the border where our terminal is. We got a little cross-border stuff there. And this big truck they gave me, to, you know, just beautiful truck with a bed and all the, you know, internet stuff. And I go down, the truck wouldn't start, and the guy just comes out and gives me four brand new batteries. You know, it's a good deal. You know, they supply the gas, and, you know, I could drive around the country. I've been up to, like, Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Reno, and Vegas, and the Triangle Club in Phoenix. I went to a cool, and I go to these meetings. I drop the trailer off, you know, And I go to the meetings. I got buddies in AA that ain't got no sobriety, but they don't go to meetings. I unhook that trailer. I ride a skateboard or walk or whatever it is. Take a unicycle to go to the meetings. I wouldn't have nothing without Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything good in my life is because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to smoke weed and drink and look at surf mags. You know, hardly even read them. And I go, I'm going to do that someday. I'm going to go to Hawaii. I'm going to do this. And nothing ever happened. It was just a bunch of bullshit. You know, but now I do stuff. You know, now I'm out there. I'm not talking about it. I'm living it. I mean, I'm actually having a good life. You know, and I don't know. I spent some time over in Hawaii. I spent about 4.5 months this last winter at the North Shore right there. I'm 49 years old, and, you know, I'm out of pipeline when it's about this big. And I got pro buddies out there, pro surf buddies, you know, and I go to the noon meeting there at Waimea Bay. You know, you ask them about me, they know who I am. Helped start a bonfire meeting over there Saturday night, Papialoa. And sometime I'm out in the jungle in a tent. Other times I'm staying with people. It's all good. And, you know, I spent 4.5 months over there surfing, making my own surfboards, stashing them under my buddy's house right there at Pipeline. You know, my buddy Jamie O'Brien. And I says, Al, just don't bring a bunch of people over. A lot of these guys, these surf kids, you know, it's all fame and fortune. You know, and they're not hitting bottom. They got money and girls and everything. But, you know, occasionally you get to talk to them. And, you know, the people over there, like they say, they're all on drugs. You know, they say cook rice, not ice. And, you know, there is a lot of problems out there. There is a lot of problems other than booze. You know, there is all this. I mean, they didn't have it when I was, I mean, but luckily I got out early. You know, I wasn't smoking no heroin. My kid, who knows? I mean, you know, now you got the heroin and you mix it with some Oxycontin, you know what I mean, a little Red Bull, and who knows? You know, you Google your girlfriend and her brother and come on over. I mean, it's just crazy. Thank God I ain't out there. I'd be mixing it all up like a pig, you know what I mean? Throwing some Cheetos in there and just... Like my one friend got caught. He was all doing crack. The cops caught him in a tree fort naked with a Playboy magazine. And, you know, he's just a young guy. He's like, yeah, there he goes. Sort of tacky. But... But sobriety's great. What can you tell people? You know, I don't know. You guys been here for a while. What can I tell you? I don't have a better plan. I don't have a plan B. You know, my life's great because I'm still here. I'm still alive. I mean, and then they were talking about the speaker CDs. Man, I got CDs that are not working in my damn truck. That stupid CD thing, I keep pushing it in. But I got some of the best circuit speakers I've ever heard. And they say, don't go dress up. You're supposed to dress up and get to the meeting early and shake the newcomers' hands and all those things. You know, read the front part of the book. Read the black part, you know. And I don't know, sobriety is deadly serious, like they say. You know, it is, it's hell out there, right outside those doors, whether you're in San Clemente or Watts or whatever, Compton I'm in. All these drug problems and these booze. And I mean, it is. I see so many people come and go. I'm trying to get into my group tomorrow. That's why I'm here. I'm going to roll out of here and I'm going to go back to my group. I got kicked out for 30 days, like I told you. The newcomer guy was buying him hamburgers and tacos. The guy with the carcass on his head, we cut that thing off. And, you know, he became the trusted servant. I said, we're going to get you some paint and just paint the building real slow. You know, and then now he's the head guy. He kicked me out. You're out of here. You're abusing all the homeless newcomer people. So they kicked me out. So that's all right. So anyways, I have fun being sober. You know, what can I say? It's, shit, it's so much fun. This guy over here talking about diving. I don't do much diving, but, you know, I do some surfing, dumpster diving. That's what I do. I'll tell you that. I'm not going to tell you my spots are. I'll tell you. One of my main spots is up here in your guys' area. What town we in? San Clemente? I say that pretty cool, huh? Like a Spanish person, huh? But San Clemente. Anyways, I go up to Surfer Mag up there. I got like 10 acres of land up in the high desert, another 10 behind that. And another 10 over there I'm paying on. And I collect surf mags. You know, we're talking about obsession. This guy told me he dove about 100 times this last week or something. I got like 2,000-3,000 surf mags. I don't read them. I just collect them. It's just something I like doing. So anyways, I go up to the Surfer magazine here. And I was over there when they were at the other place. And the guy called me up that works there. He goes, Al, come. Like, because I used to read them when I was a kid and, like I say, smoke that tie stick, you know. And Used to watch Gilligan's Island. Most of you guys probably don't remember that. Remember Gilligan's Island, dude? We'd smoking weed and bonging out, and I'd be, man, he's going to make it off the island this time. And I was watching reruns. And I'll tell you why I don't smoke tie stick anymore, all right? You know how much Haagen-Dazs is? I mean, we used to get pints of Haagen-Dazs, me and my brother, for like $2. But we would smoke that tie stick, and he'd go, Albert, go get me two chocolate chip pints of Haagen-Dazs. It was like a block away to the liquor store. I'd go, dude, I can't go that far. It's like 10 miles. I'm so stoned. I'm so high. And he'd go, I'll give you a tie stick, and I'll buy you a Haagen-Dazs. And I'd be like, what else? So, I don't know. There were some fun times out there, you know. People get hungry when they're high. My other friend, he used to like to go to Der Wiener Schnitzel. But that was so far away, too, you know. I'll get you a couple Der Wiener dogs. I'd say, how many? But, you know, I'm just like the book says, selfish. I'd never do anything for anybody unless there's something in it for me. That's what I'm all about. But that works great in AA, you know. And I love helping the newcomers. You know, I love seeing newcomers. Because if maybe you see them in a meeting and you say something they like, or you sponsor them and they say, man, I love that guy, Al. He's so cool. They make you look good. But then if they drink, they make you look good, too, because there's less people at the top. But, no, I don't know. Sobriety's been so funny, man. It's been the best life. I couldn't even imagine it would be this good, you know? And I don't know. I hope your life's good. You know, I was at the beach today, and I'm going to shut her down. But I just got out of the water. I was, like I say, I spent 4.5 months at the North Shore this winter. And, you know, I went out in Leucadia there before I got down here, and there was like a foam board, and the lifeguard guy said, I don't know, it's just sitting there. So I paddled out and caught like 6 or 7 waves. But it was cool just seeing everybody at the beach, you know, fat people, skinny people, smart people, dumb people. That's what they say. You come to AA, the dumb people get smart. The smart people get dumb. The fat ones get skinny. Everything changes. But it was just cool to see everybody enjoying themselves, you know. And, I mean, that's so cool seeing them at the beach. And I'm going to hopefully go to work tomorrow, you know, and try to give something back to life, you know, haul some material around or something, whatever they're going to put in those trailers. And I don't know, I hope you hear something in AA, you know, if you don't hear it from me, I hope you hear it somewhere. I just never want to go back out there. And I'm just grateful to be sober. I'm grateful that I made it here in Jordan's little car, if you've ever seen that thing, but, you know, you get a lot. I guess you could be yourself. You know, that's the thing. That was the thing about drinking. I couldn't be myself. I couldn't accept myself. You know, today I could sort of accept myself. I'm not a big shot, and I'm not a rock star, and I'm not a dirtbag. I mean, my life's all right. I got problems just like you. Sometimes I'm sleeping here, sometimes I'm sleeping there. But AA's been all right. You don't have to go back to drinking. And I guess, you know, you go, wow, that guy's been sober a long time. He seems like a loser. And that could give you hope. You know, you go, you take your time. You're working at it too hard. So, anyways, I miss a lot of my friends, but a lot of them are still sober, just like this area here. You know, you get sober with your friends, and it's usually the ones that are active, the guys you see here at the meeting, you know, those guys. And I hope you hook up with them, you know, like I did. If I put half the effort into, you know, being sober as I did out there drinking and drugging, it shouldn't be any trouble. I hope you enjoyed the talk, and you know, I'm just grateful to be sober, and thank you for letting me share.